Hello, welcome to California PC 187, the podcast. 187 is the penal code in California for homicide. In this podcast, we focus on murders that have taken place in the southwestern region of Los Angeles County, known as the South Bay, Harbor Area, and Gateway Cities. Aside from murder, other grimy and possibly triggersome topics may be discussed, such as rape, animal and/or child abuse, torture, and other types of crimes. The hosts might sometimes use language that could be considered offensive to some people. Listener discretion is advised.
So last episode, we talked about, we basically sang the praises of police departments located within the Los Angeles area, especially the ones that are in the southwest and southeast portions of Los Angeles. There is a former DC homicide detective named Jim Tranium, who authored a book entitled How the Police Generate False Confessions, that I would like to quote from, and I'm going to quote from. He has become one of the nation's leading advocates in rethinking interrogation and investigation tactics in regards to homicides. Anyway, what he says in this book that I really liked is, relates to this case that we're about to do today, Brett and Dewey and I, is his name is Jim Tranium, like I said, and he wrote, my job is not to represent the victim. My job is to gather the facts. What happens a lot of times is we lose sight of that. We think we know who the guilty party is, and we begin building evidence to ensure that we get a conviction no matter what. And so that's what this case is kind of about, I believe, is building a conviction no matter what, where law enforcement agencies who are full of people who have shortcomings like everybody else, and they can be stubborn and closed-minded and often unwilling to consider another point of view about the people they are certain are guilty of any given heinous crime. What do you think, Brett? Do you think that this is California PC 187?
Do I think it's California 187?
PC 187, the podcast. See, he's not paying attention. Anyways, this is our podcast.
Murder! Murder, murder, murder. You got away with murder. You got away with a lie.
So right now, San Pedro is having its very first Gay Pride Fest, and we are missing it.
Well, we're not missing it. We live in San Pedro, so it just...
No, we're not there. Can you please turn everything up? So we have recorded this episode twice.
Actually, more than that.
Well, and our audio is just terrific. Well, could you please turn off the air conditioner? Yeah. And can you please turn that off? Brett wants to watch some movie. So, okay, you know what? You can just watch your little movie. You should put on some headphones.
No. Excuse me.
And I'll do the first part. Because we just want to get through this at this point. Let's see what this sounds like, should we?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so we're okay with it. We think that even maybe the air conditioner in the background might not be a problem. But if it is, then of course we're going to have to do it over again. So, but I'm still, it's hot in here. It's hot in here.
You're always hot. You are hot.
Ooh, yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So, background story to, there's a story before the story. So, on Wednesday, April 29th, 1992, at 3 p.m. in Los Angeles County, there was a shift change. The police, the LAPD was doing a shift change. That means they were changing over shifts.
That would be a shift change.
Yes. I know, right?
When they change shifts, it is a shift change.
Yes. At 3:15 in Ventura County, because they could not have the court case held in LA. It was too, they felt it would be too much. And that maybe the jury would be a little bit too prejudiced, I guess. So at 3:15 in Ventura County, at a Ventura County courthouse, the four police officers that were put up on charges for beating up extreme brutality to a man named Rodney King.
Excessive abuse.
Excessive force, okay.
Yeah, excessive force.
They were let off with really, two of them were let off altogether, and two of them were let off with pretty light sentences. And it was infuriating, and it was unfucking believable. So between 3:15 and 3:45 p.m., in front of an L.A. courthouse, Los Angeles, downtown L.A., a crowd, an angry mob, started to gather. 300-400 people. By 3:45 p.m., there was a full-blown riot all over Los Angeles and beyond. And it lasted for 6 days, and there were 63 deaths, 2,383 injuries, 12,111 arrests. They blamed Chief Daryl Gates for the problem. They said that he should have known and that he should have had, you know, police ready when the verdict was read. But who could have foresaw that? I didn't. Did you?
No.
My friend Yolanda called me. We worked at Music Plus together.
She said, let's go get some stuff.
No, she was a black girl, and she was my friend. And she said,
riot.
No, she did not. She said, girl, are you watching TV right now? And I was like, yeah, like Gilligan's Island or something. I was watching,
what?
You know what I mean? Yeah. And then
they're not getting
she's like, you need to turn it on channel like 11 or channel 5. And so I did. And I saw Reginald Denny getting beat up.
Yep.
And I was like, what's going on? And then she's like, girl, you don't know what's going on. You know, and she told me what was going on. And so President George H.W. Bush, he called in the 7th Infantry Division of the Army and the 1st Marine Division. I remember seeing like tanks driving down the street. There was 3,600 fires set and 1,100 buildings destroyed. And even though the focus of the riot was about, you know, injustice, you know, that Rodney King didn't get the justice that he deserved. However, the rioters seemed to focus their negative attention and their destruction and their mayhem on Korean shop owners.
It seems to me like the riot was about coming up.
Right.
Ninja.
April 30th, 1992, at 12:15 a.m., martial law was in effect. It was Mayor Tom Bradley, who, by the way, Brett's uncle walked the beat with.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
A very, very, very long time ago.
The story that I heard many times, whether I wanted to or not, about him walking the beat.
With Mayor Bradley.
Yeah, Mayor Bradley.
Okay, so between 8:45 a.m. on April 30th, 1992, and 3:45 p.m., which is a very strange, huge gap of time.
Huh.
It is, right?
Yeah.
Considering that usually they can narrow down time of death pretty much based on rigor mortis, right?
I think it's the temperature of the liver.
Oh, temperature of the liver?
Yeah, okay. The blood coagulating and the temperature of the liver.
Well, that'll have to be a mini-sode. We'll have to figure out how. Well, that's what we'll do for our mini-sode. We'll research how they narrow that down.
I mean, I'm not a forensic scientist.
No, we're gonna research it. We'll
it's
find out.
I got it on a TV.
Yeah. I just thought it had to do with how hard their body was or something. Yeah. Okay, so I know it sounds really ignorant, but we're going to get to the bottom of it. Okay, anyway, there's a lady named Maida Porras, who's 51 years old. She was born on July 5th, 1940, in Costa Rica. And there was another lady, Anna Silvia Mercedes Junco, was born in 1976, also in Puerto Rico. She was 27, and she was engaged to be married. They were inside of a gorgeous 5-bedroom, lavish home inside of an exclusive part of Cerritos called Shadow Park. In order to get into Shadow Park, there was a key, a card access. Card.
Be white?
No, you didn't have.
I'm just kidding. It's just a stupid joke.
Yeah, that was not funny. No. Because, you know what? Thank you. The population of Cerritos is 50,000 population.
say. First of all, it used to be dairy farms. But then, you know, once they started to, once they started building up Cerritos, what it ended up being is very, kind of, it's kind of a rich place. Like, right. I don't know one place, one spot in Cerritos that's ghetto.
Oh, so it was cows before that? A lot of cows?
Yes.
So when just, did people decide to move in?
1954 is when it became incorporated.
Move.
So, out of the 50,000 people, basically, park range that live in Cerritos, 30,000 are Asian. And that's, I know it's a very general description, but 11,500 are Caucasian. That's also general if you think about it.
And what do you think? There was no riding in Cerritos when it's mostly Asian, but the riot
was. Okay, let me finish. And then there was about 5,000 something Latino Hispanic. That's what it said in Wikipedia. Okay? And then there was 3,000 blacks. And then there was, the rest were others.
Others.
I fit in the other category, so that's fine.
The other from another mother?
So that's just to give you a general like layout of Cerritos. Like the whole town is pretty much like two-story houses and lavish, beautiful landscaping, like waterfalls, parks, everywhere. You know, it's just a very nice place and wide streets. And Shadow Park in particular is exclusive. It's like it opened up in 1977. In 1978 is when people started moving in. At the time, the homes were $176,000, which was very expensive back then.
It's Caroline. You're supposed to say move in.
Okay. Anyway, so inside of Shadow Park, on this morning, the morning after the riots, Porras, Maida Porras, who was the owner of the home, she'd just gotten a divorce from her husband of 30 years, and she was a bookkeeper, so she stayed home all day. You know, she was able to work from home, and she had hired a woman from church, that would be Anna Junca, to babysit her grandson. And then also another child, another infant boy or girl, I'm not sure, another infant from church, from one of the church people. So Anna was a live-in maid.
So like instead of the mother taking care of the children, she worked, and so they hired the maid.
Well, her daughter Evelyn worked all day.
Right.
And I think that maybe because, you know, she might have had four children, and out of the four children, two of them had left, Evelyn and Suzanne. And Evelyn was the mother of the infant boy. And the children that stayed were Cynthia. I don't know how old she was at the time. And Ricardo, I guess the only son. And Ricardo's girlfriend, Virginia, also lived in the home. So there's four bedrooms upstairs. There's one bedroom downstairs.
Ricardo is the brother of Cynthia?
Yeah, he's Maida's son.
And he's got his chick living with him?
Yes.
Oh.
I know, right? My mother would never let a dude live with me. That's so crazy. Yeah. I mean, I did have a dude living under the bed.
That's why you had him under the bed?
I had him under the bed because I couldn't even let her know that he was in the house. So it's just, you know, but anyway, so he had it like that. He got to have his girlfriend live there.
Yeah.
So anyway.
I always wonder what that pillow was underneath your bed.
Shut up.
and the bars.
You need to knock it off.
Lock it in there.
Okay, so. Stop. Okay, so Cynthia and Ricardo lived there with Virginia and the maid. Around 8:30-ish is when Cynthia says that she left for work. And she said that she called throughout the day just to say hi to her mom, to say, hey, what's up, mom? And that there was a busy signal all day long, which kind of tripped her out a little bit. When she...
Back in the day when they had busy signals.
I know, right? Yeah. What a trip. Well, they have busy signals now.
Hey,
if you take your phone off the hook.
Not, I mean,
yeah, if you take the... Well, nobody has a landline anymore.
Not like before.
Nobody has a landline anymore.
I know. Who has landlines?
Which I think that if you legit, if you have a children and you have old people in your home, you need to have a landline. Yeah. Okay, so anyway, between the hours of 8:30 a.m. and 3:45, somebody, either one or more persons, entered the home and they confronted Maida Porras in her bedroom, her master bedroom, and they shot her three times dead. And she was found, she was laying there with her eyes wide open. Junco was chased from the living room. This is what later on, the evidence seemed to show. She was chased from the living room. There was probably about nine shots at her, but there was five in her body. And she was face down in the garage. She had been holding one of the babies. And they know this because the baby had blood splatter all over it. Now, the babies both were fine. They were placed very sweetly and gently in the playpen in the living room. But like I said, one of the babies had blood all over him. And it later was tested, and it was found to be Junco's blood. So it would appear as though she was holding the baby when she first got shot.
That's crazy.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
Poor, I'm so glad the baby didn't get hit. I mean, I don't want her to die, but, you know.
No.
So Cynthia called, like she said. She arrived home around 3:45 p.m., and she saw the babies. Of course, she was alarmed. She looked and saw the blood all over one of the babies, and they were probably crying. They probably hadn't had their diapers changed in a while. They're probably hungry. Who knows? And she noticed that she checked and saw that there were no injuries on the children. She went upstairs to her mother's bedroom, found her mother lying on the floor dead, face up with her eyes wide open. And she, upon arriving on the scene, Cynthia had said that she noticed that her mother's car wasn't there. And her mother parked the car.
Busy seeing her all day. How many? Yeah, like three or four times.
I don't know, but her mother parked the car in the garage, and she noticed that her mother's car wasn't there. Just sit on that for a minute. Okay, so,
sit on that. That's like Happy Days. Sit on it, Fonzie.
Okay, well, so the first thing she did was she called her dad. And then she called 911. When homicide detectives arrived later that evening, they surveyed the house, of course, and they found the maid, Anna, lying face down in the floor, in the garage, on the floor, dead. They did an absolute sweep of this whole crime scene, okay? And there was not one bit of anything that even indicated that anybody else was there. So at first they were thinking maybe it was a murder-suicide. But that doesn't make any sense because if they were thinking that because of her divorce and because of maybe depression or something, that Maida had killed herself and, you know, I guess chased the maid first. She'd had to have, right? And then went upstairs and killed herself, yet there was no weapon. And so that couldn't have happened.
Right.
That's ridiculous, right?
Right.
And what was missing was her car.
Oh, yeah,
she had a light blue Nissan Maxima. It was a little older model, and it wasn't there. At 4:08 p.m., this is like what? How many? Like, what, 15, like 23 minutes, something like that, after Cynthia discovered her mother's dead body at 4:08 p.m., somebody, the gas station attendant, reported that it was a Caucasian blonde woman who looked like she was in her 40s, stopped at a Long Beach gas station 11 miles away from the murder scene and proceeded to fill up the tank of Maida's car with Cynthia Porras' gas card.
That was good of him.
I know, right? Because then what this person turned around and did was return the car two blocks away from the murder scene and leave it.
That's nice.
That makes no sense, right?
No, the whole thing doesn't.
So when detectives Johnny Brown.
Good old John Brown.
Very nice, tall man. And his partner retired like a month later, so I don't even know his name, Dominguez or some. When they arrived upon the scene, the first thing that Cynthia and Ricardo said was, Derek Snowden did it.
Yeah.
Did we know? We know that he did it. you know what, like, we just saw him, like, he was across the street, and my mother saw him, and she was shaking, and she was scared, and she was trembling, and she said to us, she said, I'm afraid of that man.
Well, planting a seed.
Right? They insisted that it must be him. So, and the reason why they thought this was because, see, first of all, I need to say that there was no DNA. Well, back then they didn't test for DNA, but fast forward in 2000 something, they tested for DNA and there was no DNA of anybody except for Anna and Midas. So there was no fingerprints, no sign of burglary, and no forced entry. It was just really bizarre. It was really scary. A lot of people were scared, especially the riots are going on.
Yeah, no shit, huh?
Yeah, and people, that's why I brought up the riots to begin with, because yeah, the day
actually,
before the
it
riots
like
started.
Perfect timing for, you know, someone,
right?
A professional to, you know, burglar or whatever, thief. Or
how scary. People were tripping, and stuff like that doesn't happen in Shadow Park. Yeah. It doesn't really happen in Cerritos, much less an exclusive area where there's security guards and where you need a key, you know, to get in. So whoever this was that took the car, filled it up with gas, and then brought it back had a key. They had access.
Well, I mean, they could have jumped the fence, but
really with the car?
Oh, yeah. You're right.
Yeah,
well, wouldn't
yeah,
there be
yeah,
a car
yeah.
in there? I mean, wouldn't there be a car in the car? No, I guess you're right. They don't have any videos of people coming in.
No, they didn't have any video. I hope they do now.
Because
that's crazy, right?
Yeah, it is. It seems like they'd have video cameras at the gate where they people. Were
well, they did have video cameras at the gas station. It was a very grainy that the police had to get it. What do you call it? They had to get a warrant to have it. You know,
search it.
Yes, and so, there was a grainy video of a white Caucasian of a Caucasian blonde woman buying gas and filling up the tank.
And if these people have these gas stations that buy these janky ass like security systems, you can't even see who it is. Why would they even waste their money with that?
Well, you got to think about it. It was 1992, and they didn't necessarily have the best equipment back then.
Yeah, video.
So the finger gets pointed at Derek Charles Snowden. The
black man did it.
He's a black man. Yeah. Okay, so the Porouses moved into Shadow Park in 1978, a year after it was built. So did the Snowdens. And they lived across the street from each other. Snowden. They'd known each other their entire lives.
Well,
the children grew up together.
They did get along. Yeah, they played.
They got along until Derek was about 15, when the next door neighbors to the Porouses across the street, the Flicks, went on vacation during July 4th weekend, 1985.
Party.
And Derek and a bunch of his friends broke into the house and they had a kegger party.
Right idea.
Derek thought that, of course, he was going to get a bunch of girls to like clean up the mess for him. And it was going to be as though nothing had ever happened.
Instead, he smoked crack.
And he continued to, he had a substance abuse problem, okay? And he continued to party. And then he took their car, he took some of their jewelry, and he was found somewhere in Shadow Park, parked, sleeping, caught. So Maida and her daughter Suzanne testified against him. And because of this, he went to CYA for 2 years. CYA is California Youth Authority. And from what I hear, I don't know, it's worse than any fucking prison ever. The children are just horrible to each other. That's what I heard, right?
I've never been there.
Yeah,
but I've heard stories. I've heard stories, but you know,
they're absolutely brutal. They say.
Well, children, they're brutal. Period. Even CYA or not, I can imagine.
Oh,
that.
I know. Kids are like my mother used to say. Kids can be cruel.
Yeah, kids can be. They are cruel.
Can you hold this for me? I need to get a cigarette.
Yeah.
So, who knows? Maybe he's a tall guy. Derek is 6'2", maybe 3'4". I don't know. Tall, skinny. He was because he was like one of the very few black people that lived in that community. He didn't necessarily like do what people might stereotypically think that black people do. I don't want to sound like.
He was like that dude on the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, the brother.
Oh, okay. Right.
Was he, like,
well,
he was,
in a way.
He was a black kid trying to get out of a white man's, or a black, white kid trying to get out of black man's body?
No, like a lot of people called him Oreo because they said that they said exactly what Brett just said.
He grew up in his element.
People said that about him. He listened to Slayer. He was a skater. he had long hair, and he put like this grease in it to make it look long so it didn't like go out. He wore flannel shirts. He talked like a valet dude. Like he talked like he's from California. He didn't like what's up, bruh? Dude? Like slap. Yeah,
what's up, bruh?
Yeah. And so he
like,
was
I'm sure.
Yeah, so he was just a product of his environment.
Yeah.
And at that time everybody was skating and everyone was listening to Slayer, I suppose. Smoking pot.
That would be the fucking the typical version of saying like what would a white person be like? What, like I mean, yeah, skater, Slayer, you know, like what would it be if he was black?
Well, look, so like this one time, just as you know, it's kind of I don't know if this. Okay, anyway, so this one time, like, listen, this one time I was in jail, I was in a holding tank.
And what?
In Long Beach courthouse, and I was sick because I'd eaten something like the night before in the county that was so disgusting that it gave me the runs. And so I was like balled up, you know, waiting for my court date. And I was like, oh, it's horrible. So I had my head down all day. And there was this girl that had just a very distinct, clear, black accent. And, you know, I can say that because I took a class at Cal State Dominguez Hills. And it was called Black English. So she had a very black English accent. And, she got out on Prop 36, so she got put in a white suit and let go. And she was so excited when she got back from seeing the judge. And she was just going on and on and on and on and so excited and putting on her white suit that I had to look up and see her. And she was white. She was a towhead.
Oh, you thought she was black? Blonde.
Yes. So my point in saying that, I said that to say this, is that whatever environment you grow up in is, you know, so it doesn't mean anything. Like, it doesn't mean that you think that you're this or you think that you're that. You know what I mean? Like, that's who you are because that's where you grew up and that's how, does that make sense?
Yeah, that's how I was raised.
Yes. And so the same with him. So, detectives, wait, where am I? I just totally threw myself off rotation.
You're in a holding cell. You're
No, I'm done with that part. Yeah,
you graduated from college and you ended up in a holding cell and some white girl.
Should have stopped. Yeah, and I had a man living under the bed. Okay, so coincidentally, this heinous crime occurring the day after the riots, of course, caused even more of an uproar. And of course, you know, and anyway, so
it's safe to say that
they were just quick to blame him. Okay,
would it be safe to say that you're a top? You're not a bottom.
You need to knock it off.
But
the man under the bed.
So Derek Charles Snowden was the son of parents who bought their home in Shadow Park in 1978, around the same time the Porras did, like I said. They both hailed from Willie Snowden, that was his dad, and his mother was Margot. They hailed from Las Vegas, Nevada. They were affluent, and they were go-getters. He was a sheriff. He worked for the Los Angeles Sheriff's Department, and at some point, they decided to go into business together, and they formed a busing company that was very successful. And they, you know, they had good values, and they were good people.
Except for the son.
Oh, stop. Yeah. You need to stop that.
The values didn't stick very well.
Okay. Well.
You know, I think there might be an argument one day.
I think it might be hard to be somebody that's
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Be Snowden, kid growing up around, you know, I guess predominantly not black people and trying to fit in.
Yeah.
Just want to be a part of.
Yeah.
And then it kind of got lost himself, and that's why maybe he ended up, you know, narcotics.
Crack.
Doing smoking crack. Which probably, whether he did the murder or not, just ultimately put him in the place where, you know, they could accuse him and he, you know.
And he's got the blame.
Right. That run that he had that he thought was going to be a party to want to be around people and then that made people happy ultimately cost him his life.
That's pretty much what it was. Yeah. He was kind of like that too, like a people pleaser.
Right. But we're going to still try to get down to the bottom of this.
I'm wondering why nobody else went to CYA along with him because he wasn't the only one that broke into that house.
Right.
So the young couple prospered and blah, blah, blah. Let me see. Where am I? Okay, so although Cerritos is an incorporated city, it's a city of its own.
If you want to buy a car, go there.
No, yeah, they have Cerritos Auto Square. It's pretty awesome. It's like gorgeous, actually.
Yeah, square miles sewed up with
cars. Oh my God, it's lit up like the sky at night. Yeah. But so rather than have their own police department, they opted for getting the contracting out the sheriffs. So the sheriffs are run there. What do you call it? Or do their jurisdiction? Is that?
Oh yeah, their jurisdiction. Yeah, yeah. I guess. I mean, I don't.
The sheriffs. It's the sheriffs. It's the Lakewood sheriffs.
Yeah. You're out of your bounds. You're out of your territory, sheriff.
No. Yeah, the Lakewood sheriffs are no joke too. Yeah. By the way.
Nope, sheriffs, period, are no jokes. No,
yeah, no, they're not. Yeah. And actually, yeah, we already went over the sheriffs in another episode.
And they're just outlaws that are cowboys that have a law behind them.
No, but they're the ones that run pretty much LA County, though.
Right.
They're the biggest gang in LA.
Yeah.
So the Snowden family was one of four black families who lived in Shadow Park. When Derek was in junior high school, he started smoking pot, and then that escalated before too long into crack cocaine. Mm-hmm. He hung out with a group that was referred to as the Hessians. Like I said, they listened to heavy metal and Slayer. He was likable. He had a good sense of humor. And he did break into the neighbor's house in 1985. And he was convicted of vandalism and breaking and entering. Let's see. I don't know. Can you just like fill in the gaps here while I'm like. Okay. So he was in the California. He was sentenced to the California Youth Authority on August 9th, 1985, and was paroled November 25th, 1987. He returned for a while after he violated parole. Then his dad died at the age of 40.
Sad.
I know, that is sad. And a month after that, he went back to California Youth Authority. He started acting out.
Back home.
So this is his record. I want to read you his record. I went to LASuperiorCourt.gov. I paid $4.95 to get his record. In 1985, he was convicted of juvenile breaking and entering and vandalism.
You're still making money off of him? Yeah, that's crazy.
Knock it off. In 1989, he was convicted of driving with a suspended or no driver's license. And also the vehicle code 16028A, which means having no proof of financial responsibility for a car. I don't know if that's a nice way of saying you stole a car. Did you just put that out?
No.
Did you put that cigarette out?
Mm-mm. Oh, no, it's right here.
Okay. Because I don't know what, otherwise I don't know what that means.
I know, I don't get it either. What, they're not, you have to, I don't get it.
His mother, after he got out, after he got in trouble a few times in California after his second stint in CYA, his mother sent him to live with her mother in Las Vegas, and that's where he lived for the next 12 years. I don't know. I guess I should look up his record in Las Vegas to see if he has anything going on there, but because he wasn't, he doesn't have any, nothing shows up on his record until 12/12/2003. When he was indicted for California PC 187, California PC 187, and California PC 959. He was sentenced on 5/22/2006 for life without parole.
Ouch.
It says LWPOP.
Ouch.
And he is serving his sentence in Vacaville, California. Other than the insistence of Cynthia and Ricardo Porras that Derek Snowden killed their mom and live-in maid, the detectives had absolutely zero leads and zero evidence. Upon learning that Cynthia's gas card was used in a Long Beach gas station, Detectives Johnny Brown and Detective Dominguez, that was his name, they pulled up the video and they saw the white Caucasian woman. And then so it was said that that Derek favored blonde Caucasian women, so that it must have been his girlfriend.
You know, you gotta act a role, you gotta play the part, so you must have.
Okay, so that's just crazy, right?
Yeah.
That's not still not evidence, though.
No, sounds to me like the most evidence they had and the most footwork they did, or the police investigating they did, was just the picture or the book.
They just questioned people
a
lot.
Derek, at the fucking gas station.
Derek did have a girlfriend. Her name was Zoe, and they'd been. It was. Every single time that he came to California, he would hang out with Zoe. And the police also questioned her, and they gave her a polygraph, and she passed it. They questioned her several times throughout the next 12 years, along with other people. 13 years afterwards, they were able to test the DNA, and none of it belonged to Derek.
Huh.
Okay, so the license plates, though, so Maida Porras' car had very specific personal license plates that said M-A-Y-D-A-S on them. So whoever committed this crime switched the license plates out. And they put license plates that just so happened to belong to Derek's dad's busing company. However, what I heard, this is just through the grapevine. This is gossip. I'm going to say it. Was that there was a guy named Benedict.
Huh.
That had been a part of the group, you know, in earlier years. But when Derek was in CYA after Derek's dad died, Benedict broke into Derek's parents' house several times and stole Derek's dad's gun collection, as well as license plates, which he hung proudly in his garage. Benedict hung them proudly in his garage. And so I'm just saying. 10 years after the murder, there was no identifiable fingerprints except Monique, Derek's sister, who was 14 years old at the time of the murders. Her fingerprints were all over the license plates.
Sleepwalker.
Wait. Her fingerprints were all over the license plates, and her left thumbprint was on the back passenger side door of the car. That's it. There was also a Bazooka bubblegum wrapper in the ashtray. Yeah. And that didn't prove to have any DNA evidence in it. On January 21st, 1993, the city of Cerritos offered a $20,000 reward for anybody that could give information that would lead to the arrest and conviction of, you know, the perpetrators. But nobody came forward. Well, yeah, nobody came forward. They did, actually, but detectives didn't believe them. Detective Johnny Brown retired for medical reasons in 2000, and a well-renowned cold case closer, Detective Cheryl Comstock, came in and, true to form, put the case of the Shadow Park murders to rest.
Yep. She got her man.
And this is how she did it.
Desire to be rich and famous.
She's on TV and stuff a lot. She went to Derek's mother's house in Shadow Park because his mother still lived there. In fact, she still lives there today. But she went to his mother's house, and she brought up the fact that the murder weapon was
upstairs in the
no, it was a 38.
Yeah, after she fired. No, I'm just kidding.
It was a 30. I know, right? Yeah. After Benedict broke back in the house and
right,
put it back.
Right, and they tipped her off.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, they planned it out.
Anyways, stop. So she mentioned, she's very nice. Look at Cheryl Comstock, the detective, the cold case closer. She has a reputation for being able to close cases because of her niceness. She is so nice and so friendly and so good with questioning people that they just want to give her information. So she brought up this fact of the murder weapon, and she said it was a 38 caliber weapon. And so then Derek's mother went promptly upstairs to her underwear drawer and pulled out a 357 that had the capability.
What is Detective Cynthia doing in an underwear drawer?
No, the mother went up there. Oh. And she pulled out a 357 and promptly handed it over to Cheryl Comstock. It turns out that this 357 weapon had the ability to shoot 38 bullets, and that ballistics showed that it was, in fact, the murder weapon. Bam. Derek was in a drug rehab by this time in Santa Ana. He was 37 years old, and he was arrested on 12/12/2003, and he was indicted for the murder of Maida Porras and her maid, Ana Junco Mercedes. All right, Ana Silvia Mercedes Junco. Usually, the kind of gun that was found, I think you said it was distributed and given to California Highway Patrol, not the sheriffs.
Yeah, I mean, I'm familiar with this firearm because it was a special type of firearm. It was a 357 Smith & Wesson, and it was unique looking. It had an old wood handle that looks like a carved out bone.
And you know what is so weird is that I also heard, and it could just not be true, but like that at one point Benedict was walking around with a California Highway Patrol jacket on. He said that he had gotten from a car. They left the window rolled down.
He might be able to clip a freaking a jacket, but there's no way in the world I would believe they would be able to clip.
You never know. You never know. Some people get caught slipping, even the police.
Yeah, they wouldn't want to tell though. They didn't tell.
Of course
they didn't,
not.
They didn't log it or, you know, admit to it.
It doesn't. I think that the serial numbers though. I don't know. Anyways, it was the murder weapon according to the police, and so that was put into evidence as such. A grand jury decided that yes, he should be indicted. He was indicted with special circumstances. The team that led the prosecution was led by Deputy District Attorney John Lewin, who also is a consultant for TV shows and has appeared on several true crime TV shows.
The judge.
So no, he was the deputy district attorney. And so it's kind of interesting how he's also known to be a cold case closer. So the cold case closer and the cold case detective.
Yeah. What a team.
I know. And so Derek's defense lawyer was Ann Maloney Dowidziak. Hopefully I pronounced that okay. She was from Redondo Beach and a graduate of UC Davis Law School. She defended Derek, and you would not believe
the
defense that she came up with.
Who put this together and who okayed it to be admitted in court? They're insane.
Okay. Break.
Break.
Okay, so we're tired and we're going to wrap this up. So we're going to tell you about the prosecution's case. What the evidence and what they used against Derek was... were these things. One, witness testimony that Derek was seen across the street from the Poros home a week or more before the murders. Okay, well, it was Easter. Baby, I know, baby. Come here. She finally, baby. Come here. This is why she's mad, because this is why he was seen. There was no stay-away order. There wasn't a restraining order. It was 1992. Wait, no. Yeah, 1992. And it was his mother's house. His mother lived across the street. No, please. His mother lived across the street. It was Easter Sunday. He was seen smoking a cigarette out in front of his mother's house after Easter dinner with Zoe. And that's that. He wasn't there to menace anybody or to terrorize anybody, and he went back to Las Vegas. But that is when Cynthia and Ricardo report that Maida shook with fear upon seeing him across. I'm sure she must have seen him many times. It's not like he lived at his mother's house anymore. He lived in Las Vegas, but he visited occasionally. She had to have seen him at other times throughout the years. I'm thinking, maybe I'm wrong. Okay, and also I want to go. We listened to what we had recorded, and they might have all. No disrespect. She's from Costa Rica, not Puerto Rico. Same with Anna Junco. She's also from Costa Rica. So I apologize for that. Hearsay from Porras' children. It was admitted into court because it said that because they believed it to be true that it was admissible. So the hearsay that Maida had trembled upon seeing Derek, that was allowed to be, it was admissible. Testimony from an estranged friend, Benedict. Okay, so Benedict was pretty much the star witness. Benedict was the friend that used to smoke methamphetamine with Derek in the garage when they were teenagers. He's also the one that broke into, according to everybody in the neighborhood that they grew up in. He's the one that broke in and stole Derek's dad's gun collection and also license plates. but he was the star witness. And he testified that he had seen Derek in Derek's mother's garage 6 months earlier cleaning a 38 gun. Ultimately, the murder weapon was a 357, right? So I don't know how that mattered. Right? That doesn't even make sense. So testimony from Benedict also, he stated that on the night of the murders, that Derek had snuck over to his house around 10 p.m., knocked on his bedroom window, and said, "Man, I shot somebody and I gotta go." And then he split and went back to Vegas. And I know for a fact that this did not happen because I was with Benedict. So there, we were in Fullerton with these creepy old tweaker people. So I was 19 at the time, so okay, give me a break.
Now we're the pretty old people.
Dude,
I'm just kidding.
with this long-haired dude and a 40-something blonde Caucasian woman in Fullerton. That's where I was. I was with them because Benedict had called me at like 9 o'clock, something like that, begging me to escape from my parents' house in the middle of martial law and go hang out with him.
Yeah, you gotta put your boyfriend's under
And
the
I was like,
bed.
dude, it's martial law.
And my boyfriend's under the bed.
And but I wanted to see him so bad and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, he's not the boyfriend under the bed.
The book.
That was another guy. Okay, so the motive, so this was also the evidence, the motive that they said the motive was because Maida and her daughter had testified against him in the vandalism, breaking and entering case in 1985. So he was very bitter and revengeful and angry and killed, brutally murdered these women on account of that. And then just very gently picked up the baby and put the baby in the playpen and left. Stole the car, filled it up with gas, and brought it back.
Cerritos for you.
The proof, so they also used the fact that he favored blonde women and that it was a blonde woman seen in the video.
What color hair was the mother that got killed?
Then they tried the mother.
Yeah.
They were not, Brett. Anyway, so proof. They also said that there was proof that he was guilty because he had had a past of getting gas cards and switching out license plates before he filled up cars that he never had with gas, and having female friends. If it just in case the gas card was in a woman's name, he'd have female friends, such as the blonde woman at the gas station seen in the grainy video, fill up the tank.
Yeah, this is crazy.
That isn't it? It's odd, right?
The way he said, not,
But
he's not
the,
even.
these are the, but none of this is proof.
I
This
mean,
is just all like
he's
what
not
they
even like
think.
trying to be white. Trying to be a white person. He's worse than. He's like not even tripping. He's like beyond a stereotypical of a person like
Like
a
they're
black person.
too.
He
Come
makes
on.
everybody look bad.
He didn't do this.
I
What are you
know that,
talking
but
about?
still, I mean, they could
So
be.
anyway, I don't know what you're talking. Let me just finish. So there was also hearsay from an ex-girlfriend's sister, an ex-girlfriend in Las Vegas. I guess the last girlfriend that he had in Las Vegas, of course, a blonde white girl. And by the way, Zoe had red hair. But anyway,
You can't win them all.
Zoe was the girlfriend, the California girlfriend that he saw every time he came to California. Anyways, so this sister, she had an adversarial relationship with Derek to begin with because her sister and him were on drugs together, and so she didn't like him. And she says that she said, "Why don't you go back to California?" And he said to her, this is 10 years after the murders had occurred, he said, I can't because I shot some people."
Now,
So
it's
they used her
crazy.
testimony.
Anybody who did kill somebody wouldn't say that.
No,
Not the way
that's
they did it.
absolutely ridiculous. It doesn't make any sense to me. But maybe that's all true. Maybe they're truth tellers. Maybe Benedict is the most honest of all, the star witness, which when I went to LASuperiorCourt.gov and pulled up his record, he has a history of, let me see, anything from urinating in public to possession of methamphetamine, like 3, 4, residential burglary in which he served a year, and Grand Theft Auto. So, just saying. Okay, so they used the busing company license plates against him.
Yeah. Talk about keeping it close to home.
And they didn't, the fact that Derek Singer's sister's, Monique's fingerprints were on the license plates and on the car, they tried to say that maybe she was the blonde Caucasian girl in the video. They legit tried to say that. And she's a dark-skinned black girl. And I don't care how grainy the video is. They said she had a blonde wig on, or maybe she had bleached her hair blonde. They were trying to pull that. Just very, very, very bizarre.
You know, this is like
and that he had lured her into being a part of the whole thing with him.
This is just what the price you have to pay with him being a part of the Shadow Park Secret Society.
And maybe that's the price you have to pay sometimes when you're black.
This is better than that.
Unfortunately. Because, yeah, those are ridiculous, ridiculous arguments. Derek's defense, he had an even more ridiculous argument, in my opinion. And this is what their argument was, is that Monique, the 14-year-old... That Monique, the 14-year-old sister, stayed home from school that day, that she, in a sleepwalk, she put on Derek's dad's old sheriff's uniform. She got his gun. Now, mind you, this is a very heavy gun. I guess the 357 is, it's not, it's, it has to be, it's a six shooter. So there was like, what, there was 12 shots altogether. They counted. So they would have had to reload the gun.
There was no shell casings at the crime scene.
There was three shell casings in the living room. Okay, so, so she sleptwalked across the street because she was so bitter and so upset, and she just blamed the fact that her brother wasn't around anymore and just all this, you know, her dad's death. She blamed it all on them, on the fact that Derek had gone to CYA because, you know, I guess his dad was really upset about it. And this is what the defense is saying, said, and that she sleptwalked and she went over there and she brutally murdered these two women, placed the babies in the playpen, stole the car with Cynthia's gas card, drove to Long Beach, filled it up, and then snapped out of it when she parked the car two blocks away. And that jealous she, sister? In fact, no, she wasn't jealous. And then, in fact, she was angry because she felt like it was the destruction of her family when Derek went to CYA. That's what they're saying. And so then, because she was 14 at the time of the murders, there was some kind of a law that would grant a 14-year-old immunity. And so therefore, she couldn't be held accountable for the murders anyway. So therefore, nobody is responsible.
This is what that lawyer
went to law school for. That was the defense.
That's crazy. You can't defend that.
Nonetheless, the jury didn't buy it. And Derek Stone was sentenced to life without the possibility of parole. He's never, ever, ever, ever getting out of jail. And I have, I don't think he did it. I just really do not believe that.
Well, if we can get the freaking, the blonde
wig. We need to speak up.
The blonde wig frick theory of the sleepwalker. Maybe she just.
Well, what's your theory?
I mean, if there is a slim chance that freaking that was true. She did it with a blonde wig.
I don't understand why her fingerprints were on the license plate. And why they were on the door. She said that it was because she threw away the license plates. So I guess she threw away the license plates in the trash can.
She threw the Barbie dolls?
Listen. And that she used to ride her bicycle around the Porras' house and that she might have touched the door.
She's lying.
She said at first that she didn't remember whether or not she went to school that day. Then she said, no, she was at school till 4 p.m. I don't think she did it either.
But she's definitely, like, why would she be forced to? I mean, she would love family that much that they'd say, oh, we want you.
No, she didn't accept responsibility. She's got a doctor. She's got a mother. At the time that he was indicted, she was doing very well with her life. She's, you know what I mean?
She's 14.
No, she was 14 at the time of the murders.
Right, I know what I'm saying. Now she's successful.
Like 26 at the time of the trial.
Right. And she's still going to
and she
testify?
Said, oh, yeah, she testified. Okay. And she had two female cousins, that said that she had admitted it to them, that she slept walk. And that, anyways, the jury didn't buy it. And so he's doing life without the possibility of parole, and that's that.
Maybe if it was a jury driven like the South or something. Like,
I have a few theories.
Can we hear them?
Yes. Would you like to hear them?
I would love to hear them.
One is that the family did it.
Then
had something to do with it. It's awfully weird. Because I'm thinking that somebody went upstairs and was maybe talking to or confronting Maida. And when the maid heard the shots, she ran. And the person caught up with her, shot 3 times in the living room, caught up to her, shot with the baby in her arms. They obviously cared enough about the baby, the fate of these children, to where they took the baby. Yes. And put him back in the playpen and finished. I don't think they were an expert shot because they took him they shot at her 9 times, dude. That's not an expert shot.
Well,
like
shot.
a one shot to me is an expert shot.
True.
You don't chase somebody around. That's kind of messy, if you ask me. That's a messy kill. I mean, come on. Chasing her around the freaking house? She could have got away. But she had, you know, I mean.
Well, no, my point was saying that none of them. They all hit, didn't they? Most of them hit.
Five of them hit.
That's pretty good.
Well, because they probably cornered her in the garage.
Okay. And we still haven't decided.
I find it very funny that the mother parked her car in the garage, and yet upon arriving home, Cynthia thought that her mother wasn't home because she didn't see the car. But if she didn't see the car, then that's because she looked in the garage. So why didn't she see the dead body face down?
Why?
I'm just wondering.
Right. No, I'm not trying to argue with you. I'm just saying, I'm trying to wrap my mind around it to really try to figure out what we can both agree on, or to come to like maybe kind of agree on. Is it if the car's in the garage, she's scared, or someone's following her, or it was because the riots just jumped off? What do you think?
No, she was calling all day.
No, I'm talking about when the mother pulled the car in the garage. What was her reason?
The mother always parked in the garage.
So what was the?
Why wouldn't she park in the garage? That's what
automatic
it's for.
Garage door opener.
Yeah. Okay. Hello.
The daughter didn't see the car. So
she said that she didn't see the car. Well, if she didn't see the car, that's because she looked in the garage.
Oh, I thought you meant she didn't see the car, so that was odd.
No, she didn't see the car, so she didn't think her mother was home.
Oh, okay. Okay.
That means she looked in the fucking garage.
Or she knew that her mother always parked the car in the garage.
Yes.
I don't know if she took many days off or not. Obviously, she was concerned about her mother because her mother, you know, she took work off.
Yeah. That's no, bullshit. She didn't take it. She got off work.
I don't think she's.
And then out of all the things to steal. Okay. So those houses are worth $2 million now. They're pretty well off. They had lots of nice things. There was tons of cash in the maid's room. There was jewelry. Hey, the only things that were taken were the car and Cynthia's gas card.
This whole thing is foul.
I'm just putting it out there.
So what was your other theory?
My other theory is that Benedict, he broke into the, everybody knows, all the people that they hung out with, their group, their clique, knew that he broke into Derek's parents' house several times, stole gun collections. He had the license plates on the walls. They weren't friends. So it's so funny that he was a star witness because they were not friends. Derek did not like him, did not want to talk to him, did not want to have anything to do with him. So for him to say that he was kicking it in his garage, or for him watching him clean a .38 caliber gun, and then for him to say that Derek came and confided anything in him is absolute bananas.
So they were saying, the witness said that they saw Derek cleaning a weapon?
Benedict testified that he saw 6 months before the murders that he saw Benedict cleaning a .38 caliber gun, but they weren't friends.
Yeah.
Derek believed 100% that while he was in CYA, that Benedict had broken into his parents' house on more than one occasion. So if he broke in there, he could break in there again to put something back.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Like a weapon. But I don't even know necessarily if that is the weapon because really, so it's a 38 caliber gun, but now it's a 357 with the ability to shoot 30. I don't know. Just the whole thing is hokey. It's hokey.
38, 357. Why are the numbers so different? So
far? I don't know. But so that wraps this up.
Yes, and I'm glad we got through it. But I still have some unanswered questions. I'm left with the, like emptiness in my stomach. How like.
You're just going to have to figure it out on your own time. So,
my own time?
Yes, you're going to
keep your own time.
No, you can't steal somebody else's
stuff. I'm not stealing it. Yeah, it's just like, you're going to be part of a secluded Cerritos Shadow Park.
Don't let the sunshine fool you.
Bye.
Okay.